Good evening. My name is Herb, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Welcome to our 12 Traditions workshop. Please join me in the prayer for an open mind. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions in you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions, and especially you. This is the foreword to the pamphlet, AA Tradition, How It Developed, by Bill Wilson, published in 1955. How shall we AAs best preserve our unity? When an alcoholic applies the 12 steps of our recovery program to his personal life, his disintegration stops and his unification begins. The power which now holds him together in one piece overcomes those forces which had rent him apart. Exactly the same principle applies to each AA group and to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. So long as the ties which bind us together prove far stronger than those forces which would divide us if they could, all will be well. We shall be secure as a movement. Our essential unity will remain a certainty. May we never forget that without permanent unity, we can offer little lasting relief to those scores of thousands yet to join us in their quest for freedom. It is the purpose of this workshop to review and discuss each of the 12 traditions so we may better understand and apply them to our fellowship and to our personal lives. Please join me in a few minutes of meditation on that purpose. That is why we are here. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We are here to talk about our second legacy, unity, and to review the 12 traditions. Crosstalk is allowed in a loving and supportive manner. To be informed and helpful are our only goals. As you know, I think, I do a lot of work at the Mary and Joseph Retreat Center in Palos Verdes, and they have a retreat for couples on December 5th, the weekend, December 7th, 5th to the 7th, Friday night through Sunday lunch. And it's being facilitated by Father Terry Ritchie, who is a Catholic priest of about 50 years and sober about 45 years. He's done this retreat for 44 years. And so it's a wonderful wisdom-based retreat if you're interested in going as a couple. He doesn't do it necessarily from the any type of doctrinal perspective. He does do it from AA and Al-Anon perspective. He's a member of both. You may or may not have been to the workshop on Saturday on centering prayer, but it was well attended and we had a really good time. We do have recordings of it that have been now edited and put up on the website, 12steptapes.com. And so you could find it there, and Dave is making it available at a reasonable price. And I don't know, it's probably 3 hours, 3.5 hours of recorded presentation and dialogue on the entire intentional consciousness, starting with prayer, meditation, contemplation, mindfulness, centering prayer, the gambit. And I facilitate a centering prayer group at the retreat center on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month from 7:30 to 9 in the evening, if you're interested. There's a couple flyers there on the table about that. The workshop for the steps begins in January. A nice large supply now of flyers are there. I would appreciate your support in getting those out. We did distribute to you a couple things on the 11th step. One is about centering prayer, a two-page flyer, and the other is more an inventory on a daily basis concerning your intentional consciousness. And so it's not my inventory, but I saw it and I liked it, and so I'm made copies of it for you. If you find it useful, terrific. So we're here to discuss tonight the eighth tradition, and the short form is Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. The long form, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fees or hire. But we may employ alcoholics where they are going to perform those services for which we might otherwise have to engage non-alcoholics. Such services may be well recompensed, but our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. That's really the theme of the eighth step. Professional 12 tradition. The professional versus non-professional. The distinction is, are you paid or are you not paid? So a couple thoughts, reflections that came to me over the weekend as I was preparing my assignments. AA is a spiritual entity. Now, the tradition that we've been looking at said that the group was a spiritual entity and that the group had a spiritual message. The comments in the reading this weekend were that AA itself is a spiritual entity, not a business entity. So it's a big, big concept, macro concept. So the key question that we would want to ask ourselves, or perhaps in a dialogue with somebody else, am I doing 12-step work, which is face-to-face with another alcoholic? Now, my experience and my fellowship is AA, and I'm an alcoholic. There are lots of people in this room that are not in AA, or if they are, they're not in. They're in another fellowship and a primary fellowship other than AA. So when I use the term AA or alcoholic, just translate into your own fellowship and your own addiction, so that I don't have to attempt to do the generic stuff. Am I doing the 12-step work face-to-face with another person in my fellowship? Or am I doing work that makes 12-step work possible or more effective? It's a key distinction, and we'll see it throughout the readings. Am I doing the work itself, or am I doing the work that makes the work possible? The first is non-professional. The second may very well and legitimately be professional and well paid for. So, for instance, when I'm speaking one-on-one to an alcoholic about alcohol, AA, and the steps, or at a legitimate meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been invited to be a speaker or a facilitator at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I do that for free, right? But on the other hand, if I'm speaking to anybody other than an alcoholic and I'm offering them my spiritual advice and counsel, I have every right, legitimately. Even if I'm talking about steps and the process of the steps, to charge them a fee. Because I'm an alcoholic and I'm not talking to an alcoholic. I'm not doing 12-step work in the sense of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I'm saying some things from my own perspective. If you have any resistance or disagreement with or would like clarity on any of that, that's what this workshop tonight is really going to be about. And, of course, when I'm speaking to anybody that's not an AA designated event, then I can charge a fee for that. So I've been hired by treatment centers to come in and speak to their clients about the world of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been hired by treatment centers to meet with their staff to give them some training on the steps and the vocabulary of sponsorship and meetings and what they need to be looking for. And I'm paid for that, all right? In some cases, I do it for free. Justin.
What makes you a professional in that field?
I receive a fee.
No, but you must have some kind of backing up for it, too.
Why?
Well, because people don't pay for nothing, right?
Well, of course not. That's why they pay me. They get something. Okay, if you insist, but I have a bachelor's degree in psychology, and I have a certificate in spiritual direction, but I have no other cert. The what? I have a lot of experience in AA. I have a lot of experience with the Big Book and with the steps. Absolutely, but when I'm not speaking to alcoholics or I'm not speaking to an Alcoholics Anonymous group, I'm free to charge if I want to. Well, I would hope so. I would hope so. No, wait. It's a really good point. Well, let me clarify that. I have written two books, actually. I've written a book that's a guidebook to the Big Book. But what that is, it's a summary of the instructions that were given me when I went through the steps three different times by three different people. I kept a record of all of the instructions that they gave me. And what I did was amalgamize, condense those or bring them all together, synthesize those into a orderly fashion of instructions. But the minute that I published that book, I gave the ownership of the book completely and legally, formally, to a treatment center, a women's recovery home, because I didn't want any connection with money for that. It was given to me for free. I wrote it, I took the time to do that, but it was my gift back in gratitude for the gift that had been given me, and now the House of Hope receives the royalties on that book and has since 2004 for 10 years. In contrast to my second book, which I published in 2010, which is a recap of my entire spiritual journey, especially the process of the steps and my experience with the steps, but in a much broader context, bringing in comparative religion, bringing in my experience in the Catholic tradition, bringing in my experience in the Buddhist tradition. I'm a dilettante in that area and some other areas. And for that, I receive royalties on a regular basis. So, and from that standpoint, I didn't realize that at the time, but it has given me some credibility in the marketplace because I took the time to write a book and organize my thoughts on that.
You've proven yourself with the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm reading your book and I think it's fabulous.
All right. There's still some left.
No, but I can hear your voice in the writing.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I love about it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Justin. Thank you. Richard had his hand up. The young Richard.
Weren't you in silence for 7 years?
Say it again.
Weren't you in silence for 7 years?
I was in a monastery for 7 years, which only... The what?
No wonder you like to talk.
No wonder I like to talk. That's right, exactly. Haven't stopped talking since. Richard.
How do you... And I realize this is a difficult question to ask. How do you assure, because you can't know, how do you assure to people that you're talking to that you're not a representative of Alcoholics Anonymous?
It's not my job.
But what do
it's not my job to assure people that I'm not a member of AA. I don't ever reference it. I'm a member of AA.
Or represent it.
And I certainly don't ever represent that I represent them, yes.
Do you say that you're an alcoholic?
I absolutely do say I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, that has, yeah. I'm also male. I'm also white.
Yeah, I understand. But I would assume if I were in your audience.
Yeah.
That you have.
You would assume correctly, but it's not what I said. I cannot control or manage your assumptions or your perceptions or your conclusions. I know what I say. And the tradition, of course, in anonymity, which I've spent a lot of time in fact, preparing because of my public visibility, is anonymity is at the public level, press, radio, television, and film, not in a room.
Yeah.
where there's no camera. I can say I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in any room of anybody. The PTA, the gathering of the Chamber of Commerce. I can say I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is not a break in the tradition, as long as there's not a camera rolling or a picture being taken. That's the tradition. And we'll come to it, tradition 11 and 12. Yeah. Yeah. Please.
How many people do you think received your message?
Well, I don't know. Millions.
Well, I guess because, you know, I was broken, and that's how I got into
Al-Anon. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Just kind of curious, you know.
Well, I don't know. I try to be effective in delivering the message. I resisted getting a website for years because I was concerned about the anonymity part and also the ego part. And finally, you all literally convinced me that it would be a wonderful resource for people to be able to access some of the work. I don't charge for my work. It's downloadable, all right? And one of the reasons that I'm so connected to Dave here and the work that he does in terms of taping is that he makes the resources even more available. And now he's in business. That's what he does for a business. He's a professional who's making 12-step work available. This is perfect. I didn't even plan this. No, I hadn't even planned this. But this is perfect contrast. He's not doing 12-step work tonight. He's doing Dave's work. This is his profession. This is his company. This is his business.
And a special worker.
And a special worker. And a special work he is. And so his agreement with me is that he will have exclusive rights to the CDs of the workshop for 2 years. And they'll be on his website. And then after 2 years, he releases them into the public domain. They'll go on my website for free. Please. So thank you for asking the question. Oh, yeah, thank you. I forgot we had a microphone. Okay. Just hit it. Well, is the light on?
Yeah, now it is. Just needed a moment. Nicole Al-Anon.
Hi, Nicole.
Thank you for that. Anonymity is really only broken when you say somebody else is in a program.
Not true.
But why aren't we allowed to break our own anonymity?
You're allowed to do anything you want. The spirit of the tradition is to not reveal your membership in a 12-step program at the public level. That's what anonymity means.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Just that there's a lot of confusion about that.
It's not person to
person. And it's not first name or last name or initials. We'll get to that when we come to 11 and 12. I don't want to really have a discussion about anonymity tonight. Rob.
You going to introduce me?
Rob, a compulsive eater. How about, and this has come up and I'm curious about it, I'm confused about it. A circuit speaker, you know, or a well-known member goes to a retreat or an event long distance. They're not paid an honorarium or a fee, but they may be paid expenses, travel expenses. Does that professionalize what they're doing?
Well, it is a question.
Yeah.
And do you have a theory or opinion or experience with that?
Well, I don't have personal experience with that.
All right.
I have an opinion.
All right.
I have an opinion that it is. I don't think it's inappropriate to compensate someone their expenses for long distance travel.
Right.
I will say I do have an experience sort of like that.
Yep.
OA has a convention every year in LA, and I was asked to speak on a panel, and I was not planning to attend the convention.
Yep.
So when I was asked, I said, I'd love to come and speak. Do I have to register? Do I have to pay for a whole weekend registration?
Right.
And the answer was, well, yeah, basically you can't no one can attend unless they register and pay.
All right.
And I bristled a little at that.
You should have, actually.
Why do I have to pay, you know, such and such? And I did, you know, I took the high road eventually, and my sponsor said, you know, how much have you spent on pizza? Kind of that kind of thing, you know. So contribute to the fellowship and do your service. Yeah. And I did. And I was glad that I did. Yeah. But my initial reaction was, I certainly don't expect to be paid for this work, but you're telling me I have to pay to do the work on top of, you know, the time. So, that was my
initial. That's a very real situation. And my contrasting experiences with the South Bay Roundup in Torrance. All right, they ask me regularly to do a workshop or something like that. And, of course, there's no out-of-pocket expense in terms of travel, but they, because they want me to be at the whole roundup, and they're asking me to do some service work, number one, they cover my full registration and the banquet dinner if I want to do that. And they'll put me up in the hotel each night of the three-day roundup on their dime. Now, I don't do that because I live close enough that it's not what I want to do. But that's the spirit that they have about it. If we're asking as a roundup for you to do something, we want it to, number one, be convenient, and number two, we don't want you to have any out-of-pocket expense. So it's just that's just the culture of that particular roundup. I'm invited to speak at different conferences around the country, actually, and they assure me, and I confirm this, no out-of-pocket expense. They'll pay for my parking at the airport. They'll pay for my air. They'll pay for my shuttle. They'll pay for meals. All right. Now, I'm not paid any stipend for AA talks. Absolutely. Yeah, please, Dave.
Yes, Dave, sex addict. And we had our convention in L.A. this last year, and I was on the committee, and we had a similar situation to Rob's where we had asked people to speak, and we started to make exceptions for those who were in dire financial situations where we would cover their expenses, but not as a general rule.
Yep.
For the most part, we said, well, you've spent all this money acting out. You can spend the money to go and register. But for some, that the parking or registering was going to be a problem, we comped them.
Yeah. See, now you're hearing lots of takes on this, and that's exactly right. Very much like the group itself, that's a group conscience of that particular convention. Absolutely. Wonderful. Those are three really perfect examples and all different.
Yes, George Barrel Alcoholic. Yes, I was invited to speak at a convention in the Philippines. All I had to do was get there.
Yeah, exactly. All right. All right. So when doing education or facilitating any group, there's a possibility of a fee. And so, for instance, there's a group of men that do a retreat on an annual basis, and this last couple months ago, they asked me to facilitate the retreat. It's an AA men's retreat. Excuse me. It's a men's retreat of AA people, because there's no such thing as an AA retreat. Right? There's no such thing as an AA bake-off. There's no such thing as an AA car wash. Right. I mean, really. There's no such thing as an AA retreat. There can be a retreat of AA people. This happens to be a retreat of men from AA. Now, because it's AA and I want to honor and do the work that I do, as a payback, we never had any discussion about this except come to the retreat, facilitate it for us. At the end of the retreat, unbeknownst to me, they had passed the basket, and they gave me a nice stipend, all right? A little reimbursement for expenses or whatever else, a gratitude thank you. And I said thank you. I took it, of course. Please.
Going, Kim, alcoholic, going back to these things, it just... I thought of something a few that I'd run across a few years ago. A woman was asked to speak, and they were going to pay her fare to fly out to wherever she was going, but they wanted her to send a tape of one of her talks.
Right.
And she refused.
Okay.
Because she felt it would be promotion. And her answer to them was, either you send me the money or you find a tape of mine somewhere else, but I will not send one because I won't promote.
Okay. She was what I would call a fundamentalist. All right. Yeah, it's a particular stance, a very rigorous stance. I won't say rigid because it's just rigorous. It wouldn't be my stance. People ask me for my tape. I send them my books and my tape. It's not promotion. I let them know who I am. That's the difference between a humble person and a slightly recovered narcissist.
I'm Rob, codependent.
Hey, Rob.
I think the definition of professional that has been presented is too narrow for me because.
What is the profession? The definition that you've been presented that at least you're hearing.
Well, let me say, okay.
Yep.
A professional is someone who professes something.
Okay, that's not the definition in this room right now.
Is it? What's the definition in the eighth? I didn't reread the eighth.
A person who is a professional is a person who's being paid for their time and effort. Paid is the distinction.
Okay. All right. Well, my question is, it's like, we talked about authority. What about expertise? Is a professional someone with expertise?
You're missing the point. You want to put some substance in it. There's no substance at all in the definition.
Okay, let me give you
an example. The professional is a person who's paid. A non-professional is a person who isn't paid.
Okay, that's your definition.
Well, that's the definition of the eighth tradition.
Okay, I will look in the dictionary and see what it is. I don't want to argue the point.
Okay, good.
My point is this, okay? It's like... I understand the difference between, okay, there's no such thing as an AA workshop. I'm sure you agree with that.
Because, I absolutely agree with that.
Okay, so it's like this is outside the program.
What is?
This workshop.
This has nothing to do with the program.
I understand.
This has nothing to do with AA or Al-Anon.
Yeah. But it's like, when I think of the eighth tradition, it's like I'm thinking, okay, well, it has nothing to do. Suppose someone is a psychologist, and they come into the AA meeting.
Yep.
They don't charge, but then
they don't charge for what?
They don't. I mean, they are not paid
for what?
For whatever they do in the AA meeting.
Well, you know, let's be clear. You said they come into an AA meeting.
Okay,
Are they asked to do something?
No, as a member.
As a member, yeah.
And then they present themselves as an expert.
Not in the AA meeting, they don't.
Well, it shouldn't be that way.
Not in the AA meeting, they don't present themselves in any professional capacity at all.
So AA meeting is one-on-one.
No, that's not true.
Okay, in the respect that, okay, Bill said he didn't get well until he passed it on. So it was one drunk healing another.
For me, that's the core of the AA work. That right there, what you just said, that's the core of the AA work. It's very clear in the literature. One alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. The exception would be where an alcoholic is talking to a group of alcoholics in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Mm-hmm. But still, the essential message is one-on-one.
Yeah,
I absolutely agree.
Okay. And I just I don't want to cast any, I have nothing, no problem with what you're doing. In fact, I applaud it because it's helped so many people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it's a problem of it's not with you. I'm trying to clarify the eighth edition for myself.
Right.
Okay. And it's just that different situations arise which aren't like this.
Well, that's exactly why we're talking about the tradition, which is a guideline for the different situations.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad this is really helping me to clarify my thoughts.
Yeah. And you'll find the readings from the language of the heart and in the 12 and 12 very, very clarifying as we go through this, the balance of the workshop,
yeah,
too.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. So, step eight. Step now, not tradition. I'm not misspeaking. Step eight, because we're comparing steps to the traditions. Step eight is about willingness and about compassion, isn't it? To correct the harm that we've done. We make a list. Tradition eight, the spirit of it, is about willingness, certainly, and passion. In fact, in some of the literature I was reading, it talked about eager, and that with zeal. And I hadn't looked at the word zeal for a long time until I looked it up in the dictionary. Zeal, effortless living, passionate living, warmly engaged with ardor, coming from the Latin to burn. Dedication, devotion, and zest, coming from the Greek, meaning eager. All right, and that's the whole idea behind the non-professional aspect of the Tradition 8, that we're so grateful and filled with gratitude for the gift that has been given us that we want to, at some level, give it back, pay it back, or pay it forward, as I think the movie said. So here's a couple questions, reflection questions, that came to me as I was reading this material. Do I share my experience or do I share my opinions? That's huge. Big difference. Opinions have no place in an AA meeting. No place. Experience. That's what the big book says we share. Experience. Do I share my sickness or do I share my recovery? Because we share who we are by just being who we are. We've talked about that before. We're contagious. We're either sharing the positive or we're sharing the negative because we're sharing whoever we are. That a friend of mine, Richard Rohr, says we either transform it or we transmit it. And I'll take it to a different level. We're always transmitting. We're always who we are is what we communicate. Big confrontation. So do I share my selflessness or do I share my selfishness? Or in another way, I said, do I share my selfishness or do I share myself? And I really like that. Am I sharing myself? All right? As healthfully as I can share it. And so this particular tradition, like all of the traditions, goes right back to the tradition one, talking about the whole purpose of the traditions, which is to protect our unity, the unity of the singleness of purpose, the singleness of the message, the spirituality of the group, and the spirituality of the message. The Al-Anon literature has a couple phrases which we don't have in the AA literature. I think it came from Pathways. That's my note here. It says, we're a fellowship of equals. I mean, that's a really good phrase. Or we're a fellowship of mutual support. Again, just really all-inclusive with purpose. Okay, so let's then go to the assignments. We're looking at the first of the books, which is Language of the Heart, the material from the Grapevine. Tradition 8 is on page 86. And there's just two pages there. Let's focus on page 86 first. Are there highlights or comments in anybody or questions that Michael?
Michael Alcoholic. In the first paragraph on that page, almost entirely unorganized and completely non-professional, this mighty spiritual current is now flowing from alcoholics who are well to those who are sick, one alcoholic talking to another. That's all.
Yeah, once again, reinforcing that. And in that phrase, he says, a mighty spiritual current. At first, I thought it was like the electricity current a current of energy, until I came and read the second paragraph in which he has this phrase, a life-giving stream. So clearly he's talking about a river flow here, the mighty spiritual current, which reminds me, I think I did distribute to you the healing circuit meditation. Did I? No. Okay, I'll bring it in because it's a takeoff on a meditation. Excuse me. It's a meditation taking off from Bill Wilson's article in 1958 on emotional sobriety. He has a phrase in there, and it's really dense, about the healing circuit. Well, that phrase really intrigued me in the context of emotional sobriety, so I spent some time really meditatively unpacking it, and a meditation came out. I'll bring it in next week, which is very relevant to this, the healing circuit, that level of energy that is the life of spirituality. I think Nicole was... just standing. Go on, George.
Hi, George Braille, alcoholic again. Nor does any AA like to be told just how he must handle that new prospect of his. You know, and my sponsor told me that there were many different ways to take people through the steps.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, just, you know, he did it the way his sponsor did it.
Exactly.
But I've actually developed my own way, which is...
And that's appropriate.
You know, I've been through the steps a few times, and it's yep. kind of a melange of yep. the different methods.
Yep, that's yeah. exactly my experience. My sponsor took me through, my sponsor gave me directions on the steps in my first year. He never took me through the steps. He said, do them. And he showed me the books to do it from. And of course, I didn't know what I was doing, so it didn't have much effect. But then 5 years later, I found a man who literally walked me through each page, each step in the big book. And that was the beginning of my experience. But then 3 years later, another man, another set of instructions, 85% the same, but 15% different. And then 3 years later, I went through it with another man, and about 80% the same, 20% different. But I made notes of all of these trips. And then as I began doing the workshops and basing my workshops on my own experience, which was an amalgam of all of those instructions, then it began to be obviously codified into what is now the workbook or the guidebook. And there was a point that you made. Oh, and I have personalized it, of course, because not only did I receive their instructions, but I had my experience and a different experience each time. And so that has colored my my instructions, my own experience. And that's what you were saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
You know, a lot of working the steps is not just reading out of the big book, but embellishing that with my own particular personal experience in various of these areas.
Embellishing isn't a word I would embrace. But I understood the spirit of it.
Yes, and, you know, much of my current approach embodies your teachings.
Embodies is good. Embodies is good. Embellish, because you know, we're egomaniacs, and you should see the stuff I see that people said I said, or forms that are passed out that they said they got from my workshop, and I go, where did this come from? It's not my work.
Let me change the word embellish to illustrate.
Illustrate, wonderful, good. Yeah.
Nicole Al-Anon. I have a couple things. I actually had a really great experience with one of my sponsees recently that really brought the eighth step into light. As you know, she called me and I didn't have any experience where she needed the help.
There
you go. So all I did was help her find somebody she could talk to with experience. Yep. I don't know all the answers for her, but there's a whole fellowship of people.
Absolutely.
So that's one of the ways that I can see recovery in myself, is I don't have to have all the answers anymore.
Yeah.
I want them.
Well, yeah, you want more answers and you get more answers, but
right.
We never have all the answers.
So this is the second page.
Yes, please.
It says, now, isn't this carrying our fears of professionalism rather far? If these fears ever got too strong, none but a saint or an incompetent could work for Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right.
Our supply of saints being quite small, we would certainly wind up with less competent workers than we need.
Right.
Now, I hear the stories about the letters that would be sent, and that was how an Al-Anon meeting would be held.
All right.
Via letters. Sponsoring happened via letters in the early days, and there was no phone communication. And it would take weeks for just one communication to happen. And so they were very dependent on the literature. And so I'm between the AA literature and the Al-Anon literature, I have to say I'm pretty grateful that they employ special workers.
Sure, yeah.
Because it's edited well, it's textually, visually, everything's just really well kept, and it's exactly like it says in here. If I was not paid to do this work, I'd be done.
Nobody could count on its quality.
No.
And so they make that distinction here in the middle of 87, and then we'll go on to the others. Primarily, these folks are not doing 12-step work when they're writing a pamphlet or where they're doing secretarial work at General Service Office. It says further on, they are just making more and better 12-step work possible. And so in the South Bay, for instance, we have a central office. Well, we have a manager of the central office. That's a paid employee to keep the office open, to receive 12-step calls. Now, the people who are receiving the 12-step calls and responding to them are all volunteers. But this woman who runs the central office orders books and distributes books and, you know, all that kind of stuff that the central office does. And that's a paid employee of the central office, which has then its own board of directors that manages that. Please.
Dave, and I'm in two fellowships, and neither one of them is the literature done by a professional. It's all done by literature committees that review, send out revisions for review by groups or people who are interested. So that's a different experience than I have. But I had a question on the third paragraph, and they talk about paid intergroup secretaries. Now, our fellowship
that's just what I was mentioning.
And I just was wondering how that works in other fellowships. So,
And that's maybe the same vocabulary or nomenclature for the central office manager. That might be called an intergroup secretary. That would be the person who's running the intergroup,
okay.
At least in my terminology.
Okay. Our intergroups, I guess, are much smaller, so we do not employ paid professionals for that.
Well, we actually have one in the South Bay in Torrance, but we also have a much larger one in Los Angeles.
There's one in the Valley.
I didn't know that. There's one in the Valley. Yeah, okay, great. All right, so let's go to the 12 and 12. So anybody have any highlights on page 166 that they would like to comment on? Right off the bat, it says, freely you have received, freely give. And that's really the spirit of the one-on-one that we talked about.
And then, almost no recovery from alcoholism has ever been brought about by the world's best professionals, whether medical or religious.
That's totally my experience. Being in a monastery for 7 years, I did not change. Being in therapy for longer than that, but also studying in the and getting a graduate education in psychology, that did not touch me. It did not change me. It was only when I came into the rooms of AA and stayed around long enough to be able to hear something that I began to then do some work and change. Let's see, our singleness of purpose will be defeated by professionalism, and what they mean is charging for the AA work. Almost from the beginning, we have been positive that face-to-face work with the alcoholic who suffers could be based only on the desire to help and be helped. This is the work of the 12th step. I'm kind of combining a couple things. The money motive, he says, compromises the person. And also above he says, money and spirituality do not mix. Now we saw that phrase in the seventh step, where he says money and spirituality do not mix except in the basket. On page 167, how are we doing there? Anybody have any comments, questions, resistances? Please.
Would you consider translation work?
Translation work. I would consider it terrible work because I couldn't translate anything. But sure, of course, it's work. Now, you can, if you want to translate, you could volunteer your time. But then I can't count on you. And I can't even count on the quality of the work or the promptness of the work.
Would you then consider that to be paid?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Translation for me should be paid for work. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, some is paid and some isn't.
Okay.
But it's all reviewed and possibly by paid people.
Yeah, there you go.
So, because it's, you know, I think there's 68 languages now that the book, big book, has been translated in, but they're all approved. And there were a number of different translations early on into Spanish.
Yeah.
And they were different.
Sure.
And so finally, you know, there was one that was approved.
Yeah.
And these were approved now by the volunteers, you know, on the General Service Board of Trustees and the Literature Committee. So that's unpaid volunteers doing that, but some of the translation is done by paid people.
Yeah.
So it's a mix.
Well, and he says on page 167, caretakers who swept floors, cooks who fried hamburgers, secretaries in offices, authors writing books, all of these we have seen hotly assailed because they were, as their critics angrily remarked, making, this is in quotes, making money out of AA. Ignoring the fact that these labors were not 12-step jobs at all right? They were making 12-step work possible. So there was a lot of confusion in the early days. There's very little confusion today, although there's a lot of ignorance today, all right? Which then taps right into emotions, and then people speak from places other than their brain. Nicely put, huh?
Nicole Al-Anon.
Hi, Nicole.
In case you didn't get that the last three times I was up here. The one thing that I've really, that another thing that I really appreciate, and it was in the reading and I've learned as being an intergroup rep, is as soon as it hits that process and it's completed, so it starts at the, I don't know where it starts in AA, but in Al-Anon, it starts probably in a group, then it goes to the intergroup, and then it goes to World Service.
Yeah.
And then it starts getting written, and then it's edited, and then it's taken back to World Service. And so it goes to the professionals within the program, but then it goes back down to the non-professionals and the spiritual side of the things is really where the ultimate decision is made.
Yeah.
So
there's a tremendous vetting process, right? All right. Yes, Betsy. We're going to pass the basket. George is going to take care of that. We basically didn't make rent last week again, so it's a small group. Do what you can. We've got reserves from when we had more people, so do what you can. Be conscious of it. Betsy?
The phrase authors writing books brought up a question for me. Bill was very poor early on for a long time, but he wound up a wealthy man.
Yes, he did.
Could you please explain how
that happened? Bill had royalties on the big book. You may or may not know that. Originally, the original group of AAs wanted to Bill to write the book and then give it away for free. Thank God, the group conscience and Bill's good guidance said, no, we have to charge for the big book. And they charged $3.50, which in those days was a lot of money. He had a contract which developed, I believe, over time. I'm not sure the exact history, where he got royalties on the big book and was able also to pass that on to Lois after his death. And I believe at this point there are no more royalties paid to anybody on the big book, but Bill had a portion, a percentage of the royalties being paid to somebody who had helped him with the big book preparation process. And of course, I think Bill was instrumental in writing the AA Comes of Age, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, the 12 and 12. He got royalties on all of those books. And so he ended up being a multimillionaire, as did his family at the end. And Now I believe all of the royalties from all of the works go directly into AA General Service. Please.
Just a quick piece of information. That $3.50 is worth about $60 today.
Oh, that's interesting. $3.50 in 1939, when the book was published, $3.50 in 1939 dollars would be worth about $60 right now. That probably sounds about right. I know in 1956, I had my very first job. I was a sophomore in high school, and I was a gas station attendant at a service station. Remember those days? Service station, washed your windows, checked your oils, pumped your gas, 50 cents an hour. Glad to have it. It was a great job. Yep, 1956. All right. So, page 168, if I've skipped anything, bring it up, but let's go to 168 and 169. Anybody have highlights on those pages that would like to comment on?
Yeah, Rob. So on 169, in the first paragraph there, it says sacks of letters. Letters must be answered by people who know, saying that we need to hire AA members to do this work because they, you know, have the experience of recovery. But is that... If they're right, if they're giving advice to other alcoholics, isn't that kind of 12-step work at that point?
Well, it's certainly a gray area marginal. Here they've obviously made a decision that people who are writing the letters are merely responding to letters that are written in, and it's not 12-step work, that they're giving some kind of advice and direction based on the accumulated experience. I'm not sure exactly what the protocol is there and the culture in the General Service Office, but be quite clear that they're quite clear about the difference between the professional work of a secretary who happens to be an AA person with some experience and the non-professional care that an AA person gives to another AA in terms of direction and suggestions. Yeah. But it's a wonderful observation, I'm sure they're very clear on that.
Hi, Katie, all 12 steps.
Katie.
Or probably. I haven't tried them all yet. Okay. On 169, the fear will always lurk in every AA heart that one day our name will be exploited by somebody for real cash. Even the suggestion of a thing never fails to whip up a hurricane, and we discover that it has a way of mauling with equal severity both the just and unjust. They're always unreasonable. I like that as it applies to when my life gets wrapped around money.
Right.
You know,
cause most everybody's does.
Yeah, because when it does, it doesn't matter if you're involved with me or not, I'll be cranky.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say, the difference between the definition of professional meant something to me when I thought of sports. You know, you're paid if you're a professional, and you can't play an amateur sports.
Right.
And I want to always be an amateur in the 12 steps because then it's really only about my experience, and I have to learn every single time something more. I'm not in a competition.
And if you're an amateur and you're playing at college ball, it's really inappropriate for you to be driving that gift of the BMW.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah?
Hi, my name's Greg. I'm in three 12-step programs.
Hey, Greg.
And my question is, so if I'm a worker at a central office or whatever, I'm getting paid... if I want to stick to the principles, does that mean I still have to do, that doesn't count as 12-step work. I still have to do, if I want to live up to the principles, I have to work 12-step work outside of my job that I get paid. Yeah. Okay.
Well, it's a critical question, all right, and much more relevant in the area of therapy and certified alcohol treatment programs, all right, where people are trained, they have degrees, they have lots of experience, and they're helping people at a professional level, and they're being paid. And the problem sometimes with the treatment-credentialed people and the therapists who have the degrees who are in program, they think that they're doing 12-step work while they're doing this work for helping people, and they're certainly helping a lot of people with their disease, but they're being paid for it. So they still, it would be a suggestion, need to go to meetings and need to have sponsees and need to spend free time working with their sponsees, taking them through the steps and not utilizing their degree directly in that area. All right? And so many people lose their sobriety because they get confused and they're not doing the continued service work because they construe their professional work for their service work, and it's not the same at all. If you're making money, you're working. If you're doing your, whatever labor it is for free, that's the service work. So it's critical, critical distinction. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, Jeff. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jeff.
I can relate to this. My first sponsor was my therapist. So okay. I came into the program after being a member and constantly going out.
Yeah.
So my therapist, you know, got me on his path and got me to start working the steps. And then
as a therapist or as a sponsor?
First as a therapist, then as my sponsor.
See, it's basically an issue of ethics. That was an unethical act. Hmm. A therapist cannot have a personal relationship with his clients.
Okay. My question, I mean, I always felt a bit conflicted about it, but...
Yeah. Well, I mean, I understand the heart space, and I understand the benefit. Oh, my God, he's got credibility, he's got expertise, you're doing the dance, it's very efficient.
Right.
I understand it.
But, so, as a sponsee, I guess, I felt the conflict was his.
It is his.
Is he doing it for pay or for the 12th step? As a sponsee, I'm not breaking any traditions, right?
Correct.
Benefiting maybe from having an experienced sponsor.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. No, the problem is his, not yours. Yep, absolutely. Page 170. Anybody have a highlight, question, comment, resistance?
Yeah, it's Rob again.
Hi, Rob.
I do have a problem here, or a question, we'll say. In the long paragraph there.
What page?
It's 170.
Good.
170. It says, in the middle, it says, unthinkingly, AA so employed recklessly broke anonymity to thump the tub for their pet enterprise. Closer to the bottom, says, yet not a single one of them had been hired to do AA's 12-step work. The violation in these instances was not professionalism at all. It was breaking anonymity. Mm. AA's sole purpose was being compromised, and the name of Alcoholics Anonymous was being misused.
Yeah.
This, to me, harkens back to the very first thing that was being discussed tonight, where your experience is you go to speak to a non-AA group, you're paid a stipend, they know your name, you identify yourself as an alcoholic, you talk about your experience of recovery through the 12 steps of AA, even if you don't say, I'm a member of AA, I think they can figure out where you're a member. And so... At that point, why does this paragraph not apply there? I see it's not 12-step work, but
well, because the connotation as I read it is that there is some at the public level connection between AA membership and this person at the public level. That's a break in anonymity.
Okay. So that might be the thing that doesn't jump out so clearly to me.
Right.
That they're saying it's kind of at the level of press, media, or wider community, because
they do say it, and it's not subtle. Hmm. He was immediately tempted to use the name Alcoholics Anonymous for publicity or money raising purposes. So that's in fact. Okay. Recklessly broke anonymity to thump the tub for his pet enterprise. He's at the public level using advertising of his relationship with AA and his membership in AA to give himself credibility. And that's just wrong. That's a break in anonymity.
Okay. So let's say the person, someone just mentioned a therapist who acted as a sponsor, but let's not that particularly, but the therapist or professional caregiver identifies themselves to their patient as
a member of AA.
Addict in order to, again, to have credibility, legitimacy, connect.
I would probably do that.
All right.
I think that's
so
totally
that's not
legitimate.
Professionalism at that point.
I don't know the ethics of that profession. I don't know that.
Right.
But it would seem to me, in fact, I do know that. Alan Berger doesn't at the public level.
Okay.
But he's Dr. Berger. He very clearly tells people that he's 43 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous on a personal level, because that gives him a whole level of credibility. Absolutely. It's not advertised at the public level. No, that's a one-on-one, or maybe he shares it in a group.
So I don't know. Maybe it's the is it an issue of affiliation though? Is
affiliation
Alcoholics
is good, but it's AA.
Yeah,
AA affiliation. Right. Alan Berger is not AA.
Okay.
As an organization, he's a member
just
of
member.
AA,
just a
and
member.
That
that's
then becomes an anonymity issue.
Okay, so you can share that you're a member with pretty much anyone you want as long
as
it's not at the public.
No, you can.
Right.
You can share your membership in AA any place in the world. I could go to Congress and do it as long as there's not a photographer in there or it's being recorded.
Or a reporter who puts it in the paper.
Well, no. The reporter putting it in the paper is his job. Oh, I see what you're saying. As long as the reporter would agree that he's not going to put it in the paper. Yes, I agree.
Yeah, at the AA events, which are open to the public, they make a statement at the beginning that please respect your anonymity. And, you know, they specifically go over the anonymity principle and ask that names and photos not be published.
Yeah. Dave?
What about the author that, and their book blurb, says, you know, 22 years sober from whatever, you know, do they break anonymity because you say, well, you know, they're sober from alcohol, you know, they must be an AA or something like that?
Ah, but that's a conclusion, not an advertising.
But if they said they were 20 years sober in AA, that would be a violation?
That would be a violation. Now, that's a pretty, you know, that's a fine hair, isn't it? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anybody who would read my book, even though I don't mention I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, they would have to be pretty dense not to know that. So page 171 wraps it up on this particular angle. Our 12th step is never to be paid for. Could that be any clearer? But those who labor in service for us are worthy of their hire. I just love that. The 12-step work, never to be paid for. The service to support and enable 12-step work can be paid for. Doesn't mean it has to be paid for, but can be.
Yeah, there's a spiritual axiom that, you know, we need to give it away to keep it.
Yeah.
Not sell it to keep it.
Yeah,
give it away to keep it.
It doesn't make any sense. It's that paradox that we experience. You can't give what you don't have, and to the extent that you have it, you can keep it if you give it away. What?
Milton Elanon. Why was there such a big thing about anonymity back then?
For two reasons. The first reason was that there was such a small group of people that were managing the office. They didn't want to be overwhelmed. And number two, there was such a stigma in society that they didn't want to be associated with those people. All right? That was the original. And then once Bill Wilson studied the Washingtonians, which had risen to incredible heights in 4 years, 400,000 people or 300 or 400,000 people in 4 years. And there's Bill Wilson in 4 years with 100 people, and that's a stretch, all right? And the Washingtonians had disappeared in 10 years. They were gone. So much so that Bill never even heard of them 100 years later. All right. He did not want to happen to AA what had happened to them. And one of the major reasons they blew up, the Washingtonians, is that they began self-promotion. They began looking for the headlines. They began because they thought it would be good for their business, for their cause. And that kind of egomania, which is somewhat foreign to alcoholics. Right. Would be the death of us, literally.
The last sentence,
reminded me when it says, but those who labor in service for us are worthy of their hire.
Yeah.
That reminds me of the, on page 169, and we pay them well. They earn, so we hire AA staff members, we pay them well, and they earn what they get. And I kind of like that idea because I know that I tend to minimize a lot, and I like, oh, I should give and I shouldn't be paid and compensated. So I like that, that, that balance of when I'm giving as a program member, I give freely, and being paid, I don't need to make myself less worthy because somebody might judge me for being paid. I just like that. It's felt esteeming and valued. Yeah.
Well, just know that if you're going to be paid in any proximity to a 12-step anything, you're going to be criticized. Just know that. But as my sponsor said, it's only the people who raise their heads out of the foxhole that get shot at.
You want to address like sober coaches or interventionists?
I would love to. Sober coaches and interventionists and sober companions. These are all relatively new job titles that have developed over the last 10, 20 years. And they are bona fide professions, and there's training for it, and in some instances, like intervention, there's certification, all right? But these are bona fide professions. They're not just waking up one morning, I don't have a job, I'm a recovered alcoholic, I know some stuff, I think I'm going to be an interventionist. Hey, that's just really not how it works, because it's a very life and death kind of profession. And the more training you have, and you work your, but I would never do interventions. You work your tail. I mean, I know some of us here do interventions. I don't. I wouldn't touch it because it's like a 24/7. You're on, and it's the hot site, and you're educating hysterical people, and you're calming down tornadoes, and then you bring them all together to confront the alcoholic and try to get them to go to treatment. Well, that sounds like fun. It is an absolutely perfect Al-Anon job if, in fact, you're a black belt Al-Anon, where you're detached from all the chaos. But it will somewhat feed you. Yes, absolutely. And this, and then the sober coaching is the same kind of thing. It's kind of a professionalized sponsorship in a way. And then the, what was the other one? Sober companion. It's a wonderful, it's almost a ministry, that sober companion thing, if done correctly. A woman I know does this work for one of the major treatment centers, and they send her all over the United States to be with people who are recently sober. She was recently hired by a very famous, world-renowned orthopedic surgeon. Gives you shivers to think about that he's a drug addict and alcoholic, and he's a chronic relapser. And so she's basically actually staying in his house. And of course, he hasn't stopped drinking and using, but as he says, it's really helped me reduce my drinking and using. She's getting paid whether he drinks or not, but she's there to sort of remind him. And he took her to the Bahamas on one of his trips, and it wasn't an orthopedic surgeon trip. Yes, and she had to stand by in a cottage and watch all the chaos among his friends, and then they went back home. I mean, it's kind of like, whoa, are you kidding? But she finally resigned that job because she couldn't handle it. Because he wasn't really going to actually make an effort, and so he might even just have to die. You dated that guy. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So if an AA member acting as a citizen but not as an AA member can become a better researcher, educator, personal officer, or author, that's not a word in here, on page 117 in AA Comes of Age, why not, it says. Yeah, and we already quoted this one. But those who labor in service for us are worthy of their hire. That is, people at the in the early days of General Service Office were paid less than competitive rates because people had such a prejudice about working for money in a 12-step community. And then they saw the error of their ways about justice. You don't underpay somebody just to equal the sort of the balance sheet. You make a competitive payment. So that's why you have human resources people that make sure that happens.
Linda, Coda, and Al-Anon. We're having a running argument here because I'm blessed to be able to do work in 12-step recovery that I wasn't, courageous enough to do professionally when I was 20, 30, 40, 50. So here I am, retired, standing up in front of people and speaking in another language and translating and stuff like that. And I didn't have the courage to do it before. Oh, mm-hmm. And one of the blessings is I don't have to do it perfectly. I never did do it perfectly. But now I'm like, okay, I'm doing the best I can. Take it or leave it. You know,
yeah.
It's a good place for me to be, to look and say, when I was younger, I didn't have the self-confidence or the courage or the whatever. And now they're asking me to do it, so okay.
Yeah, wonderful. So I look at Pass It On, a book written in 1984, and it has some more material on the royalties situation. Our history proves that the sometimes idealistic majority of that day was seriously mistaken. Had there been no book earnings for headquarters and no royalties for Dr. Bob and myself, this is Bill Wilson, AA would have taken a very different and probably disastrous course. Dr. Bob and Sister Ignatia could not have looked at those 5,000 drunks in the hospital pioneering at Akron. I would have had to quit full-time work 15 years ago. There could have been no 12 traditions, no general service conference. Finally crippled, the headquarters could not have spread around the globe. Indeed, it might have folded up completely. Lacking close attention, our public relations would certainly have gone haywire. Anonymity at the public level, our greatest single protection, would have evaporated. Consequently, our unity would have been lost. Tradition 8 solved once and for all the difficult issue of Bill's own position in the fellowship and the income he derived from AA. It took 10 years to work it out. And there's more here. I don't need to read it, I don't think. The book royalties he received were not a payment for 12-step work. They were payment for special services. But the money nonetheless freed his time to do the 12-step work that he unceasingly did. Tradition 8 also made acceptable the proper compensation in years to come of special workers. AA was becoming an institution as well as a publisher of its own literature. Functional and important lessons were culled from the aftertaste, bitter and sweet, of experience. A little poetic there, Billy. All right.
Speaking of which, I was one thing I maybe missed while I was up there counting the money, but in the 12 and 12, it says 8 tons of books and literature per month do not package and channel themselves all over the world.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking 8 tons, and this was written how long ago?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the General Service Office in New York is what does this, and there has been quite a bit of controversy between one particular individual who's no longer in a position of authority with the Central Office, who was complaining and sending out ranting letters that the people at the General Service Office were paid too much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean in New York?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was his opinion, and
yeah,
he
yeah.
was he was creating discord
yeah.
with his opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, in fact, the manager of the General Service Office gets something like $250,000 a year managing a budget of $15 million
yep.
and 130 people,
yep.
and that's comparable to what she would be paid. She also happens to be a past trustee of mm-hmm. AA, so
yep.
she has experience.
Yep.
The previous manager of the General Service Office
yeah.
had managed the Central Office
She's
in Hawaii
a CEO,
for
God's sake.
Yeah.
She's the CEO of a wonderful corporation.
These
yeah.
are people with considerable AA experience.
Yeah.
Experience,
yeah.
you know, who are now being paid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, of course. I'd much rather have experienced people at the helm. Exactly. All right. So, 12 Traditions Illustrated. Let's take a look at that. before we go on to other things here. All right, tradition eight. I actually didn't make any highlights on it other than the person-to-person, face-to-face comment. Anybody have any highlights or observations on the pamphlet?
I just like the first sentence. Spiritual as it is, AA remains very much of this world. I just think that's a good reminder.
Anybody else have any highlights or comments they'd like to make? Yep.
Yeah. In the second sentence, I've highlighted the vulgar five-letter word that isn't actually mentioned. Money.
Money, yes.
Yeah. That was just...
People are pretty sensitive about the issue, yeah.
And I like the cartoon, too, because I've had many nights where I'm, like, just about to go to bed and somebody calls, and I'll stay on the phone for an hour or two and say, I've got an early morning tomorrow, but, you know, you're somebody in trouble, and you want to be there to help. So that really did strike a chord with me.
As my Irish mother-in-law would say, you'll have your reward in heaven.
The first paragraph, last sentence, I don't get paid for talking with you. I'm doing it because it's the best way to stay sober myself.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, and that was the magic moment, wasn't it, when Bill and Bob were meeting. Bob was not going to give this guy from New York any time at all. But when Bill began talking about his experience with alcohol, Bob, for the very first time, heard somebody he could identify with. And Bill wasn't asking for money, all right? He had asked for the time because it was good for Bill. And Henrietta, who had organized it, Cyberling, she knew that from the Oxford Group Principles. And Bob knew that, too, from the Oxford Group Principles. All right. So let's go then to the questions. Write a paragraph. Are you a professional? How does it apply in your life? What is your perspective on your skills in AA? But more especially, personally, I'd be interested in your reflections at work, in your personal relationships with your family and friends. Anybody have a reflection that they would like to either summarize or even read in response to that question?
I don't know why I'm feeling like talking a lot tonight. It occurred to me, because I would never have put together professionalism and my relationship with my family. Mm-hmm. It just wouldn't have ever connected. But it occurred to me that it wouldn't hurt to extend to my family and friends the level of care and concentration and thoroughness that I bring to work.
Yeah.
Nicole. This was really cool for me with my family. Again, we're still going through a lot of the personal, the very private stuff. And what was really good is it's like I get to reflect so much in situations like this because it's happened so many times on my own recovery and where I used to act professional with my own family. Like I had all the answers and I knew what was best for everybody else in my family. Now I get to just shut up and I say nothing and I do nothing and I show up and I try to be helpful and useful. And this was really good reminder of just my own recovery and seeing how that works. So I get to treat my family like they're all newcomers.
Well, yeah, that works. My daughter is working now where she is supervising a group of people, and she's 24 years sober in AA and a very experienced sponsor and step worker. And she says, I really broke the code with my subordinates. I treat them all as newcomers. There's a lot of compassion that comes with that. The AA tradition, now I have the older version, so you won't be able to follow my... On pages 25 to 28, there's a whole section on this whole money thing. Let's see if I have anything. additional. Oh, yeah, he has a summary at the end. That we must at all costs avoid the professionalization of AA. That simple 12-step work is never to be paid for. That AA's going into alcohol therapy should never trade on their AA connection. That there is not and can never be any such thing as an AA therapist or an AA therapy. All right? That AA members may, however, be employed by us as full-time workers, provided they have legitimate duties over and beyond normal 12-step work. We may, for example, surely engage secretaries, stewards, cooks, without making them professional AAs. And then one additional line here on the next page. It comes down to this. Have we AAs the right to deny society the benefit of our special knowledge of the alcohol problem? I thought that was particularly well phrased. Do we have the right to deny society the benefit of our special knowledge of the alcohol problem? All right. So the next question is, do I consider myself a professional on alcoholism, recovery, psychology, spirituality? And I'll connect it to the next one about sharing with others. And question number six. So how about the personal attitude toward your own sense of your experience in sharing with other people, which is really the key... The spirit of the question. Chris, absolutely. Chris is down from Bend, Oregon.
Chris, alcoholic. Al-Anon. Okay, I have something really specific with that. I did Herb's workshop 10 years ago. In the middle of it, moved up to Bend, Oregon. And about 6 months later, when I'm around the fifth or sixth, seventh step, Herb comes up and says, Chris, why don't you start a workshop here? So here I am. I got clarity from you, which was we're just a group of people reading the big book. We're not affiliated in AA. You already mentioned that. And we'd be doing this group. And it's a small town, so we had 30 people, and those 30 people are in every meeting that you would have in any given day. But then when I'm in the meeting, I'm sharing, I just moved here. I'm feeling crazy. Because I'm also a member of the group. And it was weird because, you know, I was in no way capacity. In fact, I'm calling back to Herb and go, what are we doing? What did I just learn a year ago? Because I couldn't even remember. but it was weird because I didn't know anyone. I didn't have my regular people. And it was like in the meetings, I was getting treated like, you know, something that we don't. You know, you're not a human alcoholic. But then I'd be in the meetings going, I have a toddler. My husband's in the program. We're two alcoholics trying to be selfless because we're forced to with this toddler. Didn't come natural. I'm also an Al-Anon, so if he just worked his program, all my life would have been better, right? So I was having a lot of problems, and I just wanted to, you know, run that by you when you were talking about professional versus, you know, and I was in no way professional capacity, of course, in my head, but getting seen that way, I had this experience where people are like, wow, you know, getting treated different. And it took a while till I'm like, no, you know, come on, I'm an alcoholic. I need you guys' help. You know, I need a one-on-one too, even though at the time I was 10 years sober.
It's maintaining your sense of humor and your sense of humility and perspective. And then having somebody that you can call and be accountable for all that craziness that was going
on. I think I did call up a few times. Yeah.
Thank you, Chris. All right. Anybody else have any comment on that? Please. Actually, AA does advertise.
Considering the amount of drunks are out there, yeah. It took me a while to figure out where AA was.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's almost like you wish the billboard was right around the corner from right. That group of bars where you were.
Yeah, you wouldn't have seen it.
Oh, we didn't. But I feel like sometimes we keep it such a secret that nobody knows but us.
It's less and less so, but I absolutely understand. That's why we do the work that we do, and hopefully can spread the word. Jason,
alcoholic. Now, I've got a unique scenario. In my particular group, what they do is they have what's called moves. So when somebody in our group is moving, everybody gets together, loads up, and helps them out. Problem is, I'm a professional, and I've done it for years. I'm really, really good at it. And in my experience, like in churches or other groups, when people catch wind of that, you know, everybody uses me, you know. And I used to do it, you know, kind of because out of a need for acceptance and finding my place. And I just let it abuse the hell out of me.
Until
I got sick of it, you know.
And then what?
And now I just either, I just avoid them.
Yes.
You know, I keep it to myself.
Yes.
But now I've kind of gotten to the place where I just let them know. And if you want to use me, it's $55 an hour just for me to be there.
There you go.
You know, and I call the shots and you got to do everything the way I say it.
Nice.
And yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I'm, but because I'm new to the
program. Are they responding to that?
Yeah, actually, yeah, some do, some don't.
There you go. You know? Of course. Yeah.
And I'm happy either way they go. My problem is because I'm new to the program and I'm new to the group, I'm not quite sure my stance on it because it's a pretty big deal for the group. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, that's a sponsor question.
Yeah.
That's really, I mean, I'm so glad you articulated it here. But then you take that to your sponsor and you get direction because that's a totally legitimate question. When do you provide the service based on your expertise? And when do you say, no, this is my expertise, this is what I do for a living, and I'm happy to help out, and it's $55 an hour, and if you argue with me, it's $75.
That's right, yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. No, it's wonderful, good, yeah, thank you.
Hi, Mary Jo, alcoholic Al-Anon. I really struggled with this one because, you know, I don't know what special workers are.
Special workers are people with expertise that without them you can't get the job done, and they would normally get paid for it for doing it in a non-AA environment.
Right.
Pretty straightforward.
Right, but if there are special workers in AA...
There's no special workers in AA. What do you mean by that?
It says our service centers may employ special workers.
That is correct.
Well, who are the special workers in AA?
Authors, writers... public communications, media specialists,
but
secretaries.
Then, right.
Those are special people.
Right. But then in this particular pamphlet, they're referring to GSO areas, you know, those places. As and down here they're talking about looking at conference books and that kind of thing and making sure that things are proper.
Those are paid people. Those are paid people.
Right, exactly. So, you know, if someone were to say to me, well, what does all that mean? I don't know that I could really honestly explain that.
They're employees of an organization with a job description.
Yeah, I know all that.
But what's your confusion?
Well, I'm just saying that that was my struggle with this tradition.
What's the struggle? I still don't understand. You seem very clear to me.
Well,
if they're an employee, they get paid.
Yes, but I still don't understand in my way of explaining it to someone who's not in AA. If
yeah.
they were to come to me and say,
sure.
what does that mean if you have all these boards and whatever's going on in AA? What does that mean? And then you belong to an AA group that
Well,
is
a lot of the boards in AA are all volunteers. All
right.
those subcommittees and all that organizational structure stuff, that's all volunteers.
Right.
What we're talking about at GSO is the employer... GSO has 120 or 180
and then
employees.
GSR and all that stuff.
Whatever.
Too, right?
No, no, not GSR. No, no,
okay.
no, no. GSR, that's a voluntary situation at the group level.
That's a separate situation.
That's a what?
Separate situation.
Well, they're not employees. They're just AA members who are volunteering to do some service
okay,
work.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? I mean, I'm.
No,
like,
no, I'm not seeing what you're saying. You
I'm
don't
confused.
Understand the service structure.
I know.
Okay, well,
that's
then that's
I'm,
a study
I'm
for you then.
About that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And quite frankly, the concepts of AA would probably help you there. The booklet, the manual on the concepts would probably, if you're really interested in that. Or just get the organizational chart of AA in terms of the GSO as an employer and the organizational chart of the AA service structure. Quite different. One's volunteers, one's paid employees.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And there aren't special workers in the AA service structure. There are special workers hired by GSO as the employer. That might help.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you.
Thank you. And so the principles, question number 7, of the tradition of 8 is non-professional. We beat that one in the ground. And, of course, what it means is in the individual and group, it's about money, the weakness, and the strength or the individual or group action is free service or the service concept. The principle for the 8th step, as I've listed it anyway, is compassion. And then the spiritual substance of anonymity in that chart that will be really relevant in tradition 11 and 12 because it talks about giving up something in, as part of the anonymity, which we'll talk about in those two traditions. We give up professionalism and we keep amateur status. Our traditions surrender the individual, create the community, and ensure unity. The price and the process is self-sacrifice, self-renunciation. This is the way to sanity and serenity are the bottom notes on that handout.
George. Yeah, hi. This is a little bit related to what Jason was saying. My sponsor had advised me that when I provided my professional services for my AA friends, I should not give them price breaks.
Oh.
I should charge full price.
My and why was he saying
was,
that?
As a good Al-Anon to people pleaser was to give them a break.
I
was advised not to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And that then would be a personal decision based on sponsor direction. You take it into prayer. You've taken it to your sponsor. You make a decision. Yeah, I like that. Fine.
That's kind of, you know, if I give them a break, that's kind of getting into the, you know, I'm an AA.
You can give anybody you want a break for any reason. It's your business. Or you can charge them more because you know they're going to be more trouble and less grateful. Our respective 12-step fellowships help their members maintain their personal recovery and encourage them to offer to share their recovery experience freely with others who may have a similar problem. This we owe to our fellowship's future, to place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united, for on unity depends our lives and the lives of those to come. When anyone anywhere reaches out for help, we want the hand of our fellowship always to be there, and for that, we are responsible. After a moment of silence, please join me in the prayer of St. Francis. This is the prayer of the non-professional. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. And now we're in November, the Tuesday of the Thanksgiving week, we do not meet. I think that's the 24th or 25th. 25th. We do not meet on the 25th. Just an advance warning. Thank you. See you next week on Tradition 9. Mm-hmm.